shooting out sparks over 38 states, the Canadian plains, and the tequila fields of Mexico.
A program most deserving of a grand introduction.
The Nocturnal Journal.
The Talk of the Town. WGN Radio 720.
With your guide, Dave Hoekstra.
Welcome to this Saturday night edition of Nocturnal Journal. It's kind of our post-Valentine's Day show. We're going to talk about the romantic voice of Roy Orbison, and we've got the Random Acts of Flowers, a new charity and non-for-profit here in Chicago. And then we're going to have singer-songwriter Al Rose to wind up the show. But on the phone right now is we're really happy to have Alex Orbison, the son of Roy Orbison. How you doing, Alex?
Great. How are you doing?
Thanks for joining us on a Saturday night.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And there's so many questions I want to ask you, but I want to get to the point of why we're having you on the show is the rediscovery of this record, One of the Lonely Ones, that you found that your dad did. I believe it was in 1969. It was a lost album. So do you want to pick the story up there?
1969.
Yeah, so tell me about this record. Tell me where he was in his career. You know, I was fortunate enough to meet him when I worked at the Sun-Times. They sent me out to Malibu in 1987. I've got the story in front of me. I believe you must have been like 13, is that right?
Yep, 12 probably.
12, yeah, he was so nice. I mean, this is before there was no like publicist sitting in the room, and he took me on a tour and just so gentle. And I think, did Johnny Carson live in the neighborhood? I think he told me that. I'm just going by memory.
Yep, Larry Hagman lived right next door and was the mayor at the time. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, so
Sting bought his house, and then Larry, moved on. So it's pretty funny.
Just so gracious, just a great gentleman. But
and he actually ran that whole no publicist thing from 1959 until 1964. And then a little song called Oh Pretty Woman came along, and he wasn't able to handle the workload. So largely we've been doing a lot of repair to the actual story because people couldn't get a hold of him, and then they would just write what they wanted. So in 1968, there was a house fire here in Hendersonville, Tennessee, and burned our family home down, killing my two oldest brothers. And so my dad had just stopped his life completely at that point. And he had met my mother, Barbara, who flew over from Germany to be with him and then never left his side after the fire. And so he took the rest of the year off from September. And then the first week of January, he was writing songs. And then the third week of January, he was in the studio recording these songs that he wrote, and he started out with Child, Woman, Woman, Child, and a few of the other, two other songs that he got in. And, they really went after this album and tried to make it sound as 1969 and contemporary and sometimes racy at times. The album was completed, and then, there was such a tangle of things that all happened at once to prevent it from being released.
And where was it? And how did you find it?
The story is really crazy. The album never was released. And the one thing that I stress with this thing is that these are Roy Orbison masters. This is, sometimes 42 people all in the same studio, all doing live takes. And if one horn guy got a wrong note, they would stop and do it all over again, Roy included. And so you have these sessions that are like, the choir is on the right, the strings are on the left, the horns are in the back of the room. And these aren't demos. I'm just a skeptic anyway. So when I hear unreleased record, I just immediately think, what do we have here? Because it sat for so long. And so my dad ended up getting in a dispute with the label, and they quit paying him.
That was MGM?
Yep. Actually London had quit paying him. Okay. Internationally, it was London Decca. And then the releases weren't global. They were coming out in some countries, and even the movie Fastest Guitar Alive, the soundtrack and movie wasn't globally released. And so after they quit paying him, he felt that the deal was just done. And so so he didn't record any albums for 1970 and 71, and they ended up putting the record deal together. He leaves MGM in 1973, and these tapes ended up sitting, and literally were part of this record was in a storage in Nashville, Tennessee. And there was like a Storage Wars thing that happened where someone had purchased this for like $250, bought a storage unit because they saw these cases of these master reels in there. And then when they actually assumed it, you know, they saw Roy Orbison on the, some of these things, and they called my mom, and my mom bought those tapes back. And so, and that had happened just about 10 years ago or so. And so it's, you know, pretty wild story about, you know, them just sitting and then part of them being completely missing. And what had happened was there was more, there was some outtakes from each of the later records from about 1968. There'd be two or three songs, and my dad had recorded so many records at MGM and actually singles that that when you looked at this body of unreleased work, there was a couple what we call, you know, like the 13th song on the record or whatever. Uh-huh. You know, there was a couple of those that were actually that were from different albums mixed in. And so when you look at this, you know, there was like 20 something songs altogether. And, you know, unfortunately, my mom passed away in 2011, and I came, you know, I came on at Orbison, and, you know, I was playing drums before and then just got into the family business for the first time, really. And so it was a lot of discovery for me, and I literally could not sleep at night because why do you have these Roy Orbison songs all clumped together like this that were never released? You know, this just did not make any sense to me whatsoever. And they were all alphabetical, you know, and so they would, you'd start at A and end at Z. And so they would be from different years, you know, one from 66. And there were songs from the 70s from other record deals mixed in this these unreleased CDs that I would listen to. And there was no continuity because they would bounce from 66 to 76 to 70, you know, and so it really frustrated me because I'm actually a real, I'm like a slob, you know, I'm not orderly, but I have this OCD in me that if something isn't complete or the puzzle doesn't fit together, then I can't move on past it. So it's, it was really, you know, literally I was losing sleep. And then I thought, all right, I'm going to load it into a spreadsheet and put it in chronological order with the recording log. And when I did that in 1969, there was like 18 songs that all popped out that were recorded. And the majority of these are all recorded within like 6 or 7 weeks. And so from my own recording before, you know, in my bands, you know, you get 16 to 18 songs and then, you know, scrap the top 4 or 5 and keep 12 and you're in. And so I, you know, I approached my brother Roy and my other brother Wesley and said, hey guys, you know, I know that these unreleased songs have been sitting forever, but you know, what this appears to be is an entire unreleased record. And so part of the reason it sat for so long is it wasn't there was an unreleased record sitting in the MGM deal. It was that there was these unreleased songs. Uh-huh. And so and then I really love watching the ID channel. So and you know, I did a little forensic science of my own and I got the first thing I did was consulted the recording contract, which stated from 1965 to 1970 that my dad was to turn in 3 albums a year.
Right.
And so, yeah. And so, it was a crazy record deal, but if you look at the other, two that ended up getting released, the Big O and Hank Williams Way, then immediately I started saying, all right, where's the third?
Okay, we've got to take a break here for a commercial, yep. And then we're going to come back, sure. And we're going to play the title track, One of the Only Ones, after the commercial break. So don't go away here on WGN.
I'm cold inside. The day just died. the night has just begun. I'm out having lonely fun, waiting for the rising sun. I run that they would turn and say, get out, you don't belong. But misery loves company, so I just tag along, along.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal. That should be our new theme song here on the show. We're here with Alex Orbison, the son of the great Roy Orbison, and that's the title track of the recently discovered One of the Lonely Ones. How can people find the record, Alex?
You know, you can go get it on iTunes or Amazon or the royorbison.com store, or you know, anywhere they're selling music these days.
And also, I mean, we're going to have to break at 9:30, but there's also the MGM Years box set of 1965 mm-hmm. to 73, 13 albums. I mean, I just there's so much to talk about. I mean, I was going to ask you about the one track on Roy Orbison Sings about Harlem Woman. I was playing that. It was just really haunting.
Oh, my God.
Tell us about that real quick.
You know, my dad's co-writer is a guy named Joe Melson, who wrote up until 1963. And co-wrote Only the Lonely, Crying, Running Scared, and Blue by You. And so he had left to go do his own solo career, and then he returned in 1971. And they put together Harlem Woman at the time. And actually MGM, you know, this is the type of thing that was happening at the label. They had released it, and then the record label pulled it off the airwaves and then put another song in its stead as a single, you know, of simultaneously. They released it and then pulled it, and it is really just a monster of a song.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, it, you know, the great thing about the box set, the MGM years, is that there's so many of these things that were just cast aside and never got someone to come along and say, hey, this stuff is good enough to give it a listen. And so essentially that's what we've done this year.
Your dad, he just cast such a wide cultural net. I mean, I'm a huge Springsteen fan, and every time I go see Springsteen, when I hear Thunder Road, I think of your dad and stuff. And I just saw a tweet this week. I don't know if this is true. It was from Chuck D that said your dad was a Public Enemy fan. Did you hear that?
That stuff comes around because Acuff Rose, who was my dad's publishing company, and they were the biggest publishing company in the world, Globalized Publishing, but they had they went to the Supreme Court with a Two Live Crew thing because they parodied Oh Pretty Woman, and so there was like a sample lawsuit or something that came out of that. Roy was into it, but publisher was not.
Two more quick things. I think I was doing my research. I read, was there going to be a traveling? Your dad passed away at age 52. It was about a year after I saw him. But was there going to be a traveling Wilburys tour?
You know, it's weird. I've talked to the guys, and they say that it would have. There was going to be no traveling Wilburys tour, but I had heard my dad talk about it. And so I actually did say once in an interview, yes, there was going to be a tour, but there was going to be a show or a couple shows in the biggest cities. But they had talked about doing an old package tour, like the old shows, you know, you go play five songs and all the bands would play,
right,
everyone would show up. But so everyone would play five or six of their own songs, and then they would close the show with a Wilbury set. And so it would have probably started out with my dad going first, and he would do that to take the tension off the opener thing. And then, you know, Tom doing a set, Bob and George and Jeff as well. And, there was a lot of logistic problems with getting everyone together in their tour schedules, but I think they were having so much fun it would have been hard to keep them off the stage.
Last thing, and then you'll have to come back sometime. This is great nocturnal talk, Roy
anytime,
Orbison.
Man, anytime.
Tell us, we're going to post this on the Nocturnal Journal Facebook page, but tell us about the Tempest Storm video. I love that too. It's got that David Lynch feel to it.
Yeah, and it really does. And so we were trying to recapture the lost and lonely feeling,
right,
of that video, and we wanted to do something more edgy, and so we had three treatments, and this one came along, and we unanimously agreed that this was it called for it. And as much as people you know, just because, you know, my dad's been gone a long time, they forget that so many of the things that were happening, you know, even Pretty Woman was edited. So Come With Me, Baby was changed to Come To Me, Baby. And, you know, it was you know, there's the other side of Roy Orbison too. But that song, One of the Lonely Ones, was written right after my brothers were killed in the fire. But behind that, my dad had been single from June 6, 1966, when his first wife, Claudette, passed away in a motorcycle accident.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so for he met my mom almost exactly 2 years later. And so he had been out and single and, you know, and touring the world and hanging out, you know, definitely, you know, he was hanging out with you know, different girls, and but still living the lonely lifestyle and not wanting to go out and do those kind of things. So we wanted to take it back to what his intention with the song was this, you know, these people that are kind of sailing, you know, like ships in the night through these dark lives. And it, you know, the video is just so real, you know, when you see it, that's it did cause a shockwave from a bunch of our more traditional fans. And we had done three videos. And the first one was a picture book of my mom and dad's wedding, and You'll Never Walk Alone. And then and the next one was something similar that was very, very sweet and nice. And so, you know, it, just to change it up and keep it real, we do these things. And often we were calling them Saturday posts on the Roy Orbison Facebook. We go through the week and there's, you know, trivia and knowledge. And then, you know, we'll hit them with like a Miley Cyrus, It's Over, or, you know, Chelsea Handler on Saturday, just to, you know, keep everyone on their toes.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Alex. This is great. I mean, I'm such a fan. I'm glad this is going to bring a whole new generation into your father's music. So keep up the good work.
Great. And, wonderful. Yeah, keep your eyes out. We got a bunch cooking at Orbison. You know, that was one thing when my mom passed away. We agreed to carry on the torch because there is so much to be done. So I will be talking to you again.